Don't say it like that, Mel. Welcome to another year of Flags Fly Forever, the Baseball Prospectus Fantasy Podcast. I am your host, Brett Sayer, and with me, just as in 2014, is Mike Gianella and Mauricio Rubio. How are you guys doing in this fine new year?
Doing pretty good. It's, as I was talking a little bit pre-show, the big development in my life is I got a new dresser, and that's about it. It's been really... really, really chill time in my life. How about you, Mike?
Well, you know, I've actually had a couple weeks off from my regular job, so it's perfect because, you know, we're gearing up at Baseball Prospectus for all the fantasy content, and I'm actually a little bit ahead right now, which is pretty good. So we're all really excited for what's coming down the pipe.
Yep. We absolutely are, and we're gonna touch on that a little bit as we kick things off. We're gonna talk about what you can expect over the next couple months at BP, we're going to start this week with catchers. We're gonna go position by position, just like we did last year, and that's how it's gonna work. So we are going to start with a little housekeeping. How do I start this? It's been so long since we did this. I usually do I do the Twitter handle first?
You do the Twitter handle. I'm pretty sure you do the Twitter handle.
I'll do the basic first. All right, so you can find all of us at baseballprospectus.com. You can find us on Twitter. I am at Dynasty Guru. Mike is at Mike Gianella. That's G-I-A-N-E-L-L-A. And Mao is at MRubio52. You can reach us with questions and topic suggestions at flagsflyforever@baseballprospectus.com. And if you are listening to us on iTunes or the Stitcher Radio app, we ask that you rate and review us. I think I got through that okay, right? I'm not too rusty.
No, you did it. You did it. You got there.
All right, awesome. So the debate will rage on as to whether this is episode 37 or episode 1 of season 2, but we'll get to that. We'll probably keep the higher number just so that it will make us feel like we have more of a track record, which we do, but. We don't want to undersell that. We are going to start off with a brief topic as many of you are probably making your way into freeze deadlines and keeper leagues. But before we do that, we're going to do this first. We're going to do the topic first, and then we'll talk about the next couple months. So the topic we're going to talk about is valuing value over sort of an even positional roster. And what I mean by that is, we all get in situations where we have, you know, whether you're keeping, you know, 10, 15 guys, where you end up in a spot where you have, you know, two or three third basemen or four or five starting pitchers, and you know the values, you know where the values fall, but you don't want to you sort of default to not wanting to keep so many of X position or sort of lock yourself in. And it's always a good reminder that we talk about being value based a lot on the podcast, and it really starts with your freezes. So you can have, you know, there's no harm in keeping all of the value that you can, because that's the, you know, that's the name of the game. When you get into the auction, you want to accumulate as much value for as little cost as possible. So I kind of want to throw it out to both of you guys. Have you encountered scenarios where you've chosen value over positional flexibility? Do you agree that it is a good philosophy to jump in head first on value?
I guess I'll get this started. It was a while back, and I had Giancarlo Stanton when he was Mike, and I had him, Andrew McCutchen. I had a pretty loaded outfield, and I probably could have shed a couple of pieces here and there just to keep a shortstop. That I had Jose Reyes there. But I doubled down. I kept McCutchen and Stanton. I let Jose Reyes go by the wayside, and I've been very happy about the decision ever since. It's one of those things where you sacrifice a lot of the positional flexibility there, especially with when you're kind of making the determination between shortstop and outfield, where I guess you can fall into the trap and thinking that outfield's pretty deep and there's just a little bit more help available there, while shortstop just seems to be a very shallow position. But especially in situations like that, it was very, very low auction value that I had him for. It's just, you got to do that. And, that's definitely a decision that I support. I go value over position, because, it's something that we've talked about, last year. It's one of those things that kind of comes up in when we're talking about, what do you do in the first couple of rounds of your draft? Do you go after position value, or do you go after best player available? And, I think the Flags Fly Forever standard strategy here is to go for best player available, the first couple of rounds of the draft. So it's like, if you carry that mentality over to what you're doing with your keeper selections, I think you're going to be happy, because it might not be the names that are the marquee names, but you can still find help if you're smart about it, at positions that, are a little bit scarce. And it's just best player is usually the right way to go, especially in limited keepers. Mike?
No, I'm in the same position. I really, and if you've read me, this, I'm probably a slave of value to a fault. So for me, it's the opposite. I would rarely be in a position where, whether it's a draft or an auction or salaries, where I said, okay, like I have to do this, or I have to, keep a second baseman, a first baseman. Honestly, since we didn't talk about it, I'll talk about this the other way. It's a weakness I see of teams and keeper formats where they say, I have to keep a second baseman because second base is really weak. There's not enough out there. I don't want to be in a position where I have to pay too much or overdraft. But usually what winds up happening is what people forget. If you're in a 15-team league, for example, and there are 11, second basemen who are kept, chances are good that those 11 teams aren't even going to really be looking at a second baseman in their draft or auction. It's a little bit truer in auction formats. So I really just like to go value. The one time that I won't is if I'm really overloaded, and outfield's the one place where if there's five outfielders I can keep, I don't want to be in a position where if it's a five outfield DH roster, I'm going to max out right away. That might be where I throw somebody back who's kind of on the borderline. But I really don't like to throw away value, just because if you do that, you put yourself in a position where you're really going to be weakening your team, and almost no matter what you do, you're throwing away opportunity costs when you do that.
Yeah, I'm gonna go way back in the time machine and talk about real quick one keeper decision that I made. I think it was 2009 in a league that I played in. It was a standard 10 keeper league, but without a middle infield spot. And I had both Jimmy Rollins and Rafael Furcal when they were both quite excellent to own. I kept Furcal as one of my 10 players, even though I couldn't even fit him into my roster because I had my utility spot already used. So I essentially kept a bench player just because he was too good of a value to pass up. And I ended up dealing him after the draft for I want to say it was Joe Mauer and an okay starting pitcher. But that one paid off. That was certainly about as risky as you'd want to get with a scenario like that, and it's about as extreme as you'd get. But
really quick, was 2009 Joe Mauer's MVP year?
I traded for him before the 27 home run season.
Oh, you're an asshole.
I didn't think he was going to hit 27 home runs. No, that was just a nice benefit.
I had him that year in CBS. That was a nice year to happen.
But Brett is also most definitely that guy. Brett is that guy in your league. Like, that's the guy that you don't want to trade with, because the guy you're trading away is just going to have an MVP caliber year.
Well, that's also that's also the league that I traded for Mike Trout in 2012.
Man, they let you play?
That's still one of my favorite trades. I traded for, we're not going to devolve into these stories, but I traded for Trout when he got up into the majors that first year with the Angels, and he was really struggling. I traded Madison Bumgarner for him before Bumgarner really became Bumgarner, and now they're he's the top player in fantasy, but Bumgarner is an elite starting pitcher. So it's one of those trades that has just become more and more interesting with each season.
Okay, there we go. That's
is that a dynasty, Brett? Like, is that a keep forever?
It's a 4-year keeper, but you get you designate franchise players, so I get to keep Trout forever.
Okay,
not a bad position to be in.
Yeah, nope.
So all right. So we are going to move on to talking about our positional series, and like I mentioned before, we are starting this week with catcher, but over the course of the next 10 weeks or so of Baseball Prospectus, we are going to go position by position and really dive in as deep as possible to each of these positions. We're going to do all kinds of rankings, 2015 rankings, 3-year rankings, full dynasty rankings. We're going to do player profiles. We're going to do prospects and prospect analysis. And we are going to all jump in and talk about specific players that we are going to target and avoid. Lots of fun stuff. Mao's going to do some infographics. We're just going to have a really good time. So when you are listening to this, this will have already started, and we hope you join us for the entirety of the project, because we are going to put a lot of time and effort into it. We have a great team assembled now, a deeper team than we've had since any of us have been at BP, and we're going to use it to our advantage. So that's my spiel. You should go and check it out, subscribe, all that good stuff, and then listen to us talk in more detail about what we're going to talk in more detail about. So we're going to start by taking a trip down memory lane and doing a quick revisit of 2014 valuations for catchers. So I am going to throw this over to Mike, because he is our valuations guru, and he created these. So we are going to... let him discuss the fruits of his labor. Mike?
Thanks, Brett. Well, we did this last year, so if you're a loyal listener, you're familiar with the format. If you are a new listener, and I hope there are more than a few of you, what we basically do is we kind of run through the only league values, not because they're necessarily the most instructive, but because it gives everybody, kind of an idea of what to look for. Certainly if you play a mix, everybody we mention is going to be, somebody familiar to you. But it kind of does give a pecking order as well to the, people in the only leagues. So I thought we'd start with the American League and kind of look at, at those guys, and just as a jumping off point. And I think the first thing that jumps off to me or out to me in the American League is that, there wasn't a catcher who cracked the $20 barrier. There was a time where you kind of have one or two catchers that would do that. In 2013, he still had eligibility. You know, a V-Mart kind of cracked that, but he wasn't eligible last year. You know, it's kind of interesting, actually. Carlos Santana, who had catcher eligibility entering the season, so if you have access to this data as a Baseball Prospectus subscriber, he is listed as a catcher here because this is retrospective. But, you know, it's, and we'll talk about this in the articles this week, you know, he's not there. To a lesser degree, Joe Mauer isn't there. What I find really interesting in the American League is there's some depth. There's 10 hitters or 10 catchers that crack that $10 barrier, but there isn't really the guy that you're going to go out and invest a big amount on. You know, Yan Gomez is interesting because he kind of came close to that at 20, but you know, with just 1 year of that, I'm not necessarily sure I'd invest any more than that. And I guess my summary is I like the field, but I don't feel confident in kind of plunking a big amount of money here, even paying for the scarcity. Brett, I'll start with you. Do you have any, you know, looking at this, do you have any thoughts on, you know, kind of what jumps out at you, you know, what you see, anything both retrospectively, but also as far as any trends that you might be looking at?
Yeah, I mean, my eye jumped to the exact same thing that yours did, and there's this big glut of, you know, $8 to $10 catchers, you know, right in that sort of belly of the valuation, and they're guys that become sort of interesting names depending on what you think they'll continue to do. You have Tyler Flowers, who, you know, will likely play, and this is probably as good as he gets, but it's not impossible that he'd do this again. Chris Iannetta should get more at bats this year because Hank Conger is out of town. Stephen Vogt, who knows where he's going to be playing, but he'll be playing somewhere. Does he, you know what, off the top of my head, I don't even remember. Does he still have catcher eligibility?
No, he doesn't. He'll be
lost it. Okay.
He's first base, and he might have outfield, but he definitely has first base next year.
Yeah. All right. And then you get Zunino, who, you know, hit for power, but just did not hit for average at all. Jason Castro is now going to be in a somewhat of a timeshare with Hank Conger. That's going to be a whole mess in Houston. And you kind of lost, right? Especially if you're in AL, you lost a couple of big names. I mean, Santana's gone, Mauer's gone, Derek Norris is in the National League. It's certainly a weakened crop, and there are going to be those who reach for the Gomes and Perez's and McCann's out there, because that's really it. I mean, if you want someone who sort of qualifies as the guy you reach for, those three are it. But it's like Mike said, it's not going to be a wise strategy because of sort of the depth that's here. I mean, it's. Mal, you have any thoughts that jump out at you here?
Yeah, this is something that Mike touched on a little bit in pre-show, but it's also something I kind of want to talk about. But this, you know, you were talking a little bit earlier that these guys are pretty much interchangeable when you're talking about, especially the bottom tier, but even like the $8 to $10 guys. I mean, it's back half depth. It's not exciting and it's not interesting. But if you don't feel like reaching for the top guys, I don't think you're really necessarily going to be sad about having some of the back half gambles. And, you know, if you want to take a gamble on Mike Zunino, like, that's, I don't think that's the worst thing in the world. So do you think this depth's back here, where do you see the inflation going for the top guys? And also, do you think it kind of affects draft position at all for the guys up at the upper crust there, Mike?
Well, you know, I think when you look at this, and again, if you have access to this, if you're a subscriber, you know, notice we're in that, you know, selling subscriptions time of year. If you look at some of the prices that were paid last year by the expert leagues, which are included here, you know, I think what you kind of see is that, you know, the big investments last year, like Brian McCann, like Joe Mauer, you know, even Carlos Santana, who, you know, was he earned his keep. He was very good, but that batting average dragged him down. He was a bit of a, bit of a loser. Meanwhile, and I'm not sure if this is where you're going now, but it kind of hits the nail on the head. You've got guys like Tyler Flowers, even Chris Iannetta, who, he certainly wasn't great, but he had an average salary of five and he earned nine. It is kind of, to me, when the top guys aren't the elites, for years I used to, Jorge Posada in his heyday, I used to have the buy Jorge Posada at like 16 to 18 and then buy a $1 catcher, because Posada was just so solid that I knew I was going to get like the stats from him. And I almost didn't care what the second guy did unless, he was going to hit, like 120 and like 200 plate, at bats or plate appearances. Now it's kind of turned on its head. I definitely would prefer to get two guys who are in a mono, kind of a, that second tier, like you said, that $8 to $10 player. And as you can see here, you can grab some of those guys a little bit cheaper than that. And I think the danger zone is someone like Jason Castro last year, who, full disclosure, I was really excited about. And, I kind of, you can see my bid on here for full disclosure as well. I had a $17 bid on him, which the X-ray leagues didn't even go that high, and he really crashed and burned. So if you're going to pay here, make sure you get a guy like a Santana, who you might lose a little bit, but he's going to be productive. That danger zone is paying in the high teens for somebody when there just isn't a lot of differentiation, at least not in my opinion.
Yeah, no, that was it.
Makes sense. Should we talk about the National League?
I don't have anything else if you guys don't.
Actually, one last question. We'll talk about this a little bit later, but is this... well, he still has catcher eligibility, and we could argue how long we'll have catcher eligibility because of the Russell Martin signing. But is this the year that people start paying value for Deonna Navarro?
I still think he's going to be a bit of a bargain because I think that people are not going to take – he's not a sexy guy. He's 12 home runs, 274 average. The numbers look boring, but he's somebody who, as you see here, fourth best catcher in the AL. Now he's going to presumably DH for the most part. Yeah, Martin will probably flip-flop. I'm sure that'll work on most days. I still think Navarro's going to be a bit of a bargain.
I agree. All right, so let's move to the National League where the names get a little bit more sexy, for lack of a better word.
Yeah, the National League, it has kind of the obvious guys, and two of these guys at this point are, well, one of them is Buster Posey, who he's the closest thing we have to in either league to kind of a Cadillac, someone who's just going to roll out of bed and earn 20 in a minimum, and in a good year, like he did last year in a mono, earned 26. And then the other guy is Jonathan Lucroy, who I think if you play in a mixed, you might be a little bit disappointed, but that 300 average with the good runs, the good RBI, and all of those at-bats or plate appearances, the value with him really adds up. And then the guy who broke into the $20 range last year was Devin Mesoraco, who I'm sure we'll talk about as the week goes on at length. Great power, really exciting when you look at the fact that he didn't really play a full season. But, the other side of it is that, the BABIP was kind of made his average look like a fluke. He was kind of a streaky hitter. I really like Mesoraco, but it's kind of fair just to kind of bring up those concerns. The NL has, to me at least, kind of some of these young catchers like Darnell. He's not that young anymore, but someone like Wilson Ramos, who always seems to get hurt, but produces whenever he's on the field, which is always enticing. But then the other thing about the downside to me about the NL is there's more of that spread where it kind of, if you look at the data here, it just kind of drops off more quickly. And you just got some guys, like I think, to me, Carlos Ruiz is kind of that danger zone where you're okay with Ruiz in an only, I think in a deeper mix, you're okay. I think in a standard mix or a one catcher deeper mix, he's just sort of a danger zone guy. Like he's okay, but he just doesn't really add much for me. Again, I'll throw it to Brett. You know, is there something here for you that jumps out in terms of the NL catchers?
Yeah, the thing that jumps out to me is sort of as a group is that in the NL you're going to have to spend a little bit, where in the AL you can kind of wait back and hunt for values. There may end up being values in NL auctions, but the names are going to go, and you don't want to be the guy, you know, stuck holding, you know, Wellington Castillo or Brian Peña at the end of the draft. There's certainly going to be people paying for some upside. You got some exciting names that people are going to be driving as sleepers, guys who, you know, had decent earnings last year. I mean, you have that kind of trio right there of Ramos, Grandal, and Darnell who earned pretty much the exact same thing. They all earned right about $10 last year. You're going to get a lot of people who think that they could be $15+ earners in 2015, and it's going to be curious to see whether that group makes the Yadi Molinas and Wilmer Rosarios and of the world less expensive, because you know we kind of know what they are, and everyone, you know, human nature is to project people for what they are not, but what they could be. So that's what I'm going to be curious to see. Even though we know how good Buster Posey is, I was surprised to see his number that high in earnings. It really just does reiterate that he is about as money in the bank as you can get at the position. Those are my thoughts. Mal, you have anything?
Are we going to be paying for Willen Rosario in 2015? Do you guys think, or is that one kind of cooling off?
I don't know if anyone's going to, which is going to make him a really, really interesting guy to watch in auctions.
Yeah, because I would be okay with him under $10. Like I think, you know, around the 8 to 9 range is somewhere where I'd be all right with it. And given where his career trajectory has been going ever since it really started, where he kind of burst onto the scene with 28 home runs. I mean, it's just been, you know, a steady decline ever since then. He's moving to first base, right?
Well, he's certainly not staying at catcher. I mean, he'll probably stay there long enough to maintain eligibility for 2016, but he's not good. He's not good at all.
He's terrible. It's not a good time.
The problem is they need to move more no, and that might not happen opening day. That might be like a June or July move, which, you know, kind of puts him in a weird position. And I agree with you guys. I think he'll play, you know, but I'm looking at some of the early ADP out at the NFBC website. He's ninth overall, you know, for catchers, and he's like 6 picks behind Yadi Molina. I know Yadi Molina had a down year and was hurt last year, but that just still seems like a little bit too high for him.
No, that
does not make any sense to me. But
no,
that's a retrospect thing. I think as we get more draft data, I think he'll drop. But you know, looking at him right now, I like Rosario. I like him, not because I have any faith in him, but because I think if he plays, and they're certainly going to try to play him, he should do enough across the board and keep that catcher eligibility to be useful. I'm just not betting on a comeback. I'm kind of betting on the production that he has and people kind of looking the other way and saying, yeah, you know, he doesn't do what he used to do. But this is where the ADP data is great, because right now I look at it and I'm like, yeah, you would think that people would be discounting him, but they're not. And based on where he is right now, I just don't want any part of him.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's a very natural transition into talking about ADP, transitioning into our 2015 tiers. So we're going to cover this pretty similarly to how we did last year. We'll talk about Mike's tiers, which when you're listening to this are up at baseballperspectus.com. and sort of look at where these guys are and sort of how we feel about them, how we like them as they move down the list, and then in everyone's favorite segment, we are each going to pick a dollar player that not a dollar player but a one star player that we will sometimes sheepishly put our names behind.
Yeah, for podcast
purposes.
The $1 catcher wouldn't be very long.
Yeah, I went back and looked at some of the one star guys I recommended last year. I was like, oof.
Wait, did we do it? Did we do a one star for catcher last year?
I don't think we did one star because I was.
I was talking about my articles. Like,
yeah,
I just went back some of the guys I recommended. I was like, oh, yeah.
Okay, cool. You know? Yeah, because. All right, my bad.
Yeah.
I could have been clear.
So we'll kick this back off to Mike to start since he's the author of the tiers in question. So we have no 5-star guys. Posey leads the 4-star group. How close were you to making Posey a 5-star guy?
Well, you know, we've gone through this debate the last 3 years at this point where, you know, should Posey be a 5-star or not? And just for people listening to kind of kick this off, because I don't really explain it in the article, this is, we kind of weighted as at the position, I think he'd be a 5-star, but he doesn't produce quite enough to kind of go into that category overall. And I was really close. Like I really thought about putting him there. But at the end of the day, and I hate that expression, but you know what it came down to was that he just didn't quite fit for me. So he was almost there. I would say that had he had a little more faith in him at being closer to a $30 player, you know, even 27, 28, I might have kicked him up there. But I just wasn't quite with it. So the other guys in this group, we talked about in the previous segment, or we talked about almost all of them. So I'm not going to rehash Mesoraco. I'm not going to rehash LaCroix. The guy I put here, and I'll talk about this in the article, or if you're listening to this, you know, you'll already be reading it, is Evan Gattis. And, you know, it's really funny. I'm not the biggest Gattis fan in the world, but I have to think with, you know, him out from behind the plate, he's got that whole thing that I like, and I know, Brett, with some players you like it, catcher eligibility, not playing catcher. 401 plate appearances last year, 22 home runs. Not really hard to envision him getting another 100 plate appearances conservatively and building on that maybe a little bit. I think with the Braves being weaker as a team, or you assume they're being weaker, you can't expect a lot more in the runs or the RBI. But I kind of put him on the cusp of this group for that reason. I think you could see a little bit more production out of him, and you get to keep the eligibility.
Oh yeah, I think that may end up on my tombstone when my inevitable demise comes. It'll just say, "Here lies Brett Sayer. Always draft catchers that don't play catcher." But Mike's exactly right. It makes a difference, and so I'm with you on Gattis on that. I think the risk is that Betancourt really sucks, and they go back to using Gattis at catcher. But I mean that's not really much of a risk. It's just a possibility.
I almost feel like that's why they brought in Pierzynski too. That if Betancourt completely fails, I think Pierzynski will get a fair amount of the bats.
Yeah, that may very well be true. But he's Gattis is a power bat, and he's a guy who, you know, has shown himself to be a little bit of an injury risk. And whenever you get injury risk, even slight injury risk guys away from the catcher position, things tend to go slightly better. So moving down to the 3-star group, you know, we kind of talked about Rosario before, but I want to kind of start at the top and talk about someone who's going to be probably, in my opinion, I think he's going to be overdrafted, even though I still think he's going to return solid value, and that's Yan Gomes. There's, you know, for me, there's certainly enough to keep him out of the four-star group, although I know some would make the argument that he belongs there. I think the average is a little bit fluky high. And while the 20 home run power should be there, I think the overall package will slip back a little bit. Mike, what was the biggest reason why he did not make the four-star tier group?
I think you hit most of it. I think Gomes is solid. I really like him, but I'd like to see him do it for a second year. I just kind of look at his, you know, I look at his pedigree and I see some of the same things you do. I think he's solid. I just could see him slipping a little bit. And if he slips a little bit, if say he hits, you know, 17, 18 home runs, hits 260, you know, as opposed to the, you know, 278 he hit last year, he's a three-star guy. I could definitely see him in that four-star group. He was kind of a borderline guy here. In the end, it really was the idea that he hadn't, you know, we're just looking at one-year data, and I completely agree with you. I don't think he's going to fall off big time. I just see a little bit of slippage.
Any other strong thoughts on the three-star selection? You want to go on a little diatribe for Russell Martin?
Well, you know, actually, there's probably, you know, three guys here. You already talked about Rosario. You know, first, Yadi Molina. You know, Molina's somebody who also, based on previous production, could definitely break into the four-star group. But, you know, we're kind of getting at a point with him. He's got a lot of mileage on him. He was hurt last year. I don't think it's going to be a lingering injury, but I'm concerned enough about him that I don't want to include him in that four-star group anymore. Now, I know I very well could be wrong, but I'm wary enough. You know, I just don't want to overreach on him. Martin's a guy I kind of look at, and yeah, I think the average is going to drop off. I think that was fluky. But I think the park change is extremely, but it's very favorable for him. I know, and you've discussed this before, Brett, you know, that first-year transition to the AL can be tough. On the other hand, Martin has been in the AL before with the Yankees, so I think it's going to be a little bit better. And the thing I looked at with Martin, you know, 460 plate appearances last year. As I noted before, I think he's going to DH quite a bit, you know, given that contract, given the value that they're expecting from him on the days that he doesn't catch. I think that number's going to jump. The guy I really want to talk about in this segment or in this section is Brian McCann, because Brian McCann probably, I initially had him as a two-star. And, you know, you and, was it Jeff Quinton? I think it was Jeff.
Was it
another member of the base?
Yeah, Jeff's taking McCann in the target piece. So when this comes out, you've already seen Jeff's. You've hopefully already read it, but Jeff went to the defense of Brian McCann as someone to target.
So was Jeff.
Yeah, it was me, okay. Me and Jeff.
So I kind of want to. I'll make my argument, and then you can make yours. You know, Jeff's not here to defend himself, so I'm not going to, you know, go and, you know, rag on Jeff, and I'm not going to rag on Ozzie, obviously. But I really like Brian McCann, but this for me is an earnings argument. And yes, I know he was hurt in 2013, but Brian McCann in mono formats hasn't cracked, I think it's like $15 or $16 in earnings going all the way back now to 2011. Actually, it's $18 in earnings. So, I mean, kind of what you see here, you know, and what you'll see in the article is the PFM representation of last year, where we're here in 17. That's really solid. It just, unless there's a big batting average spike, which certainly could happen, and we've got the stadium, which is favorable, I always kind of look at past earnings, and when I see a guy who you have to go back 3 years in his earnings scan to find earnings that suggest growth, just kind of make me wary. And don't get me wrong, and Brett, you can, as soon as I'm done with the segment, you can make your argument. I certainly think McCann, and I was the one who made this argument last year, I certainly think he could get 25 to 30 home runs. I'm just not necessarily convinced that he will.
Yeah, you know, I certainly would not bank on him getting to 30 home runs. Yeah, you know, there are certainly people who think he could, and you know, it's usually the park that that drives that argument. But yeah, I mean, McCann is a different player the last 3 years than he was the, you know, 6-7 years before then, when he was, you know, essentially Jonathan Lucroy, where he was, you know, sort of not Buster Posey, but he was a bankable, you know, high end catcher, that you knew would give you earnings year after year after year. I personally would have McCann in the 4-star tier right next to Gattis, just because I think it's a similar profile. Gattis is not a high average guy. I don't think anyone expects him to hit higher than about 250, and I think people think he can hit 25 home runs, and I think that's exactly what McCann can do. I think McCann will continue to get at bats at DH or first base when he's not playing catcher. And even though the Yankees have kind of bulked up their roster a little bit from that standpoint this year, I think that'll continue. I mean, A-Rod's not going to play every day. They have Garrett Jones, but he's Garrett Jones. And I think he's going to get exposed as being someone who kind of feasted on National League pitching a little bit when he moves to the American League.
You're jumping ahead, but Garrett Jones is actually my target for first base in the American League, so we'll have to vehemently disagree on that in our next segment.
Sounds good.
I look at Jones and, you know, his spray chart, and he's moving from a really unfavorable venues in Florida and Pittsburgh to a very happy left-handed environment for fly ball hitters in New York. I think the Yankees knew what they were doing when they acquired him, but you know, we'll see. I mean, he's, you know, on the other hand, you're right. I mean, he's not a great hitter, and I would never sell him as such.
Yeah, I you know, our arguments of Garrett Jones aside, and we can this has been a nice teaser for next week's episode. But McCann, I really think will bounce back in the batting average, not to his you know, former self there, but I think a 250, 255 average is perfectly reasonable to expect, and I think 25 home runs is certainly within the realm of possible. I mean, he was better than people think last year, and hit 23 homers, and he's had a little bit of time to adjust to the American League. I think things work out better for him this year, and I'm still on that train.
Yeah, I'll probably adjust him up. The bids I'm putting together for, you know, the bid article that I do in late February, like early March, are very preliminary, but I'll probably pick him up a little bit. It does go back to what we discussed and the idea that there's enough of a spread in the American League that I'm probably not going to go too crazy for any one player, though. But I think your argument's fair. I'm not – for me, the 4-star is a little bit high for him, just because of that batting average, and particularly when you look at the hitters that surround him. You know, this is more of a mixed argument. When you look at the hitters that surround him in this 3-star tier, his average last year was significantly lower than everyone else's.
Mm-hmm.
But I get it. You know, I get that if he hits 260, he could definitely make a big jump. There's no doubt about it. Now, do you have any thoughts about McCann at all?
If his average, if you believe in his average, he's definitely a 4-star guy. I don't, but I would probably put him at the top of the 3-star. I do like him better than, I think he's going to have a better year than Yan Gomes, and I would actually think that their averages are going to be pretty similar next year. I see where you're coming from, Brett, in terms of like having him up in the 4-star, but for me, 4 and 5-star, you kind of want more even production across the board. But I mean, maybe that's just my personal preference there.
He would be at the bottom of that tier for me. But
for the record, ADP agrees with you guys. I mean, he's fifth overall in the early ADP. He's a tick behind Gomes, and he's a shade ahead of Salvador Perez. So
there's a lot of upwards mobility with him. So it's upwards variability with him. I mean, so it's like it all depends on the batting average for me, and I'm just not .250. I don't think he breaks .260. So
yeah, I'm really interested to see how the McCann versus Yan Gomes debate rages out over the next 2.5 months, because I think they're going to stay very neck and neck in ADP, and I think you're going to get. You're going to get people making similar arguments on both sides, where I think Gomes, as strange as it sounds to seem, as strange as it seems, well, I don't know what I was going to say, but Gomes is the safer pick, which is odd, considering how safe McCann was, and McCann is the upside pick. But it's a perfectly reasonable argument either way, and I would also take McCann, but... Have we exhausted this? Should we move on to the?
We probably have. The final point I want to make, and I think this is what I was get to before, is that the one thing about catcher or about earnings, we all tend to like kind of want to look at upside or what people will do, and this is why I said I don't want to drag Jeff's name through the mud, but the one thing about earnings that what hitters have done in the past is often more instructive than what we think they might do. And McCann's dollar scan, and now this is in mono league the last 3 years. Now, keep in mind, these are my numbers, which are a little more bearish than PFM. I have McCann at 14 in 2014. I have him at 14 in 2013. And I have him at 11 in 2012. So it's kind of that idea that he could get better. But we've got 3 years of data that kind of tell us, like, yeah, he's not, he hasn't been as good as I think people think he has been. Does that mean he can't get better? No, of course not. But I wouldn't go crazy with him. That's where I've no problem putting him in this 3-star tier. I think to put him kind of in the top 4 or top 5, you might be hurting yourself a little bit. But we'll see. You guys certainly make some good points. I don't think you're wrong. And I mean, the thing about all these lists, and it's kind of something worth pointing out to our listeners, there's so much nuance in this. We kind of argue about guys, and then when you look at my bid limits or you look at our rankings, we're just like 1 or 2 players apart.
Yeah. But that's what makes for good theater.
Yeah, no, I agree.
All right, so let's jump to the 2-star tier and talk about sort of this cluster of upside guys, because the two star tier really is just all upside, as it really should be in the category, because you have your sort of baseline really boring guys that are going to end up in the 1-star category, and you have your safer guys who will still be worthy of ownership in all mixed leagues in the 3-star category. So the 2-star makes sense where it is, but there are some names that are going to get a lot of print on fantasy sites in this tier. So anywhere in particular you guys want to start?
I want to start with Matt Wieters because I am fascinated by him.
Go on.
Well, this is This is a guy who has he had offensive pedigree back when he was a prospect, and he was touted as, you know, this really talented offensive player. And then when he came up, his profile
he was touted as Mark Teixeira behind the plate.
Yes, he was. There was just a ton of stuff thrown behind his offensive profile. Then he comes up, and his entire player profile just completely changes around, flips around. Now he's a defensive guy. I mean, he only had 112 plate appearances last year, but there seemed to be some signs of life, you know, offensively at least, and he was on his way to having a good year. So, you know, there's a thing that I've heard, and it's, you know, locally it's been applied to Wellington Castillo, where you take these guys who, you know, the offense doesn't quite show up, and it happens to catchers, you know, right away, but it's still latent in there, and then sometimes it can crop back up. Do you guys believe in Matt Wieter's offensive force behind catcher, or are you guys still tepid on that and think he's going to kind of revert back to shape?
I think one of these years he's going to have a season that people expected when he was drafted, and I have absolutely no idea when that is going to come, and I'm unlikely to pay for it.
That's fair.
I think he is what he is, you know, and the average last year, it's a small sample. He gets hurt. He has way higher BABIP than he's, you know, ever had in the whole season, except for his kind of split season in 2009. I just think he's a 20 to 25 home run guy, 250 hitter, maybe 260 hitter. That's all solid. I just don't see a lot of growth with him. You know, he's another one like McCann where I kind of look at the past earnings, and that's kind of why I have him in the two-star tier. I just don't – I think Brett's right. I think he could do it. I just don't like to bet on a guy suddenly bucking the trends of his entire career. So I'm not skeptical if he's healthy that he's going to be solid. I'm just skeptical that he's going to kind of get better and take it to this next level. On the other hand, he's 28 years old. He turns 29 in May. He's certainly not an ancient guy.
Yeah, he's definitely not. We all know how late catchers can develop, so it's a different ballgame with these guys. And he's by far the eldest statesman of he's by far the eldest statesman of this tier too. And I want to talk a little bit about Yasmani Grandal. He was to be perfectly honest, I wanted to take Travis d'Arnaud for my target guy in the post that is up now, but he was already taken by a different staff member. So I went with my 1A choice in Grandal, and the unfortunate part is that he's going to be the benefit of some hype just for sort of obvious reasons. You know, he's going to a better park and a better lineup, and that's all great and good. But I do expect him to be better another year removed from his knee surgery. He tore his ACL in his right knee. He came back and he struggled a little bit in the first half. Had an 800 OPS in the last 3 months of the season. But the biggest thing the knee might have contributed to is that he's you know, I wrote about this on the site. He's never been a guy with a platoon split. And in 2014, he hit all 15 of his home runs from the left side of the plate, and he was abysmal from the right-hand side of the plate. He had a 500 OPS, no power, no batting average, nothing. And, you know, it's a little bit harder to hit right-handed when you have a right knee that's not operating at 100%. There's really nothing in his profile that suggests that he has trouble hitting left-handed pitchers, and I don't expect that to continue. And if you isolate that out, he really was not all that bad as a left-handed batter. So, you know, of all of the guys in this tier, I think Grandal has the most immediate upside. I think, you know, there's you know, I mentioned, I mean, if he does what he's capable of doing and he's healthy, he could be this year's Devin Mesoraco. I mean, he could do that. He could hit, you know, close to 25 home runs, hit for a reasonable average, and cap off a lot of earnings. But, you know, you're also talking about a catcher who is not 2 years away from major knee surgery and has a PED suspension on his resume, and has not hit all that well in his career, but it's certainly understandable why he's in the two-star group, but that's the argument for him.
Yeah, he's my value pick, which you'll see if, you know, because this will be out. So I don't really have, I can't disagree with Brad. I see all the positives, and, you know, quite honestly, even if you just stand still, the move out of Petco to Dodger Stadium, which is sometimes misclassified as a pitcher's park, it's not necessarily the park to get a hit, but it's a positive power park. That's a pretty big move for Grandal. I could see him jumping to 18 to 20 home runs just if he stands still. So I think that I completely agree with Brett. I like the upside here, but even if he doesn't hit it, there's some sneaky value in this two-star tier.
Perfect.
Can I ask you about your boo?
Which one? I have a lot of boos in this category.
Oh, there's only one boo. It's Derek Norris going to Petco.
Yeah, he really is. I do. I adore Derek Norris.
You do? What do you think?
I have given up trying to be rational when it comes to Derek Norris.
He's my guy to avoid in the target avoid pieces. So I don't know if we want to get into a long debate or just, you know, shake our fists at each other on these virtual tapes and disagree.
No, I'm. You can hear me shaking my fist at you. Norris has his flaws, but he is a guy who can hit for average and he can hit for power and he can even run a little bit. The upside is there for him to be an elite catcher, and I don't think he'll ever get there, and that makes me sad. But the upside still exists in force.
I actually don't disagree. I think the upside's there. I just saw some stuff in the second half that concerned me. You know, the numbers dropped off, and you have to kind of dive into the splits because sometimes it's just garbage. But what I noticed, some of the problems he's had his entire career kind of came back, and, you know, particularly balls like below the zone. If you pitch Norris low and you pitch him low out of the zone, he kind of adjusted in the first half last year, and then you kind of go back and look at the Brooks baseball data. He went right back to just kind of hacking at those pitches, and you could see the numbers plummet, too, against right-handers. And if he can't hit righties, there's only so much value in Norris. And I mean, I get it. I get the upside, and I wouldn't disagree with that. I just don't know if that's going to come this year. You know, as we talked about with Wieters, it can take catchers 4 or 5 years before they see that upside.
Absolutely. Go ahead.
I was going to say, Norris could get there this year. I'm holding off for one more year with him at least.
Yeah, I mean, the right-handed pitching thing is a thing that's been with him his entire career. I mean, he kills left-handed pitching. He just destroys them. But, you know, he has issues laying off. Exactly what Mike said. He has issues laying off balls down and away from right-handed pitching. And he has shown spurts of being able to make the adjustment, and he just hasn't quite gotten there. I mean, his first half was excellent last year, and his second half was horrible. So you can he's essentially the flipped version of his new teammate Matt Kemp. And I mean, he has the one great half, the one terrible half. But he's in a redraft just for 2015, unless I'm kind of taking him as sort of an end game flyer in a shallower league, where I just, you know, I have solid offense everywhere else, and I just want to get a guy who, you know, could blow up. He's certainly a good choice as any, but he's not someone who I'm going to back vehemently for 2015 exactly. But he's someone who I do back vehemently in Dynasty Leagues, and that you know, that's a subject for a different podcast and a different column. But
you're gonna talk about him on the Fun Podcast, according to Ben.
Yeah, we are most definitely going to talk about him on the Fun
Podcast. Shots are fired, Ben. If you're listening to this, you haven't fallen asleep yet.
Yeah, Ben fell asleep 20 minutes ago.
He did.
Yeah.
He did.
So that's my Derek Norris bit. You guys want to cover anyone else from the two-star tier before we move down to the dregs?
Not me, just because a lot of these guys are going to be covered in, you know, Darno, as you point out, is going to be covered already, so I don't know if we necessarily need to dive into him.
Also,
yeah.
I'm willing to move to the one star if you guys are.
And Wilson Ramos is definitely a Tino topic, which is a deep cut if you've been listening for a while.
Yeah. He is most definitely a topic, but we're going to move on. So for the one star, instead of going too deeply into these names are not fun for the most part. Let's play America's favorite game. So I flipped my three-sided coin before, and it landed on Mike. So we're gonna go Mike, then Mao, then me. And Mike, who's your guy?
Rene Rivera. You know, it almost gets talked about too much now. I don't know if you can talk about it too much because the work that, you know, Harry Pavlatis and some of the other great people doing catcher framing is out there. But Rene Rivera is going to play simply because the Rays acquired him for that framing ability. And, I mean, heck, they played Jose Molina, who couldn't hit a lick for years. And Rivera, while I think his numbers last year were inflated, if you bump up those 329 plate appearances from last year to, say, about 450, you take him out of Petco, I wouldn't really be surprised to see him hit, you know, 15 home runs or so. And I think everybody's going to look at that half season last year and think that he's just not going to do it again. Again, we're talking about the one star tier. I'm not suggesting that Rene Rivera is going to turn into a three-star catcher. I'm saying that he has a lot more upside in this group and is going to get underdrafted compared to almost anyone else in this group. He's that guy I like in a two-catcher league, or in an only league, I certainly kind of like pushing him a little bit more than some of these other names.
All right. Mal?
I have a love-hate relationship with Tyler Flowers. Tyler Flowers cost me a bottle of Bullet a couple of years ago because I actually thought he was going to do what he did in 2014 and 2013. And he did not. This is a tough guy to pin. He's done the September thing a couple of times in his career, where he's, you know, shown a little bit of life at the end of the season, and you know, looked like he was going to start putting things together, and just, you know, kind of tanked out and didn't put up the type of numbers that you thought you were going to get. But you know, he did have a strong second half last year, and he just went absolutely insane in September, and I don't want to weight that too much. But if this is a guy who, you know, is going to hit 240 with, you know, over 10 home runs, I mean, that's not bad, especially in the one stars. When you start looking around at the tier, it's, you know, there's some bunching, but I actually think there is some upside there. And, you know, he's going to play because the White Sox don't have their catching situation figured out. And he's actually done a lot better job defensively back there, and they've really liked what he's done framing-wise as well. So he's going to get you plate appearances, and he might give you some bonuses offense-wise. Brett?
I'm sort of torn here, but I'm going to make Miguel Montero my guy here. Montero has not been particularly usable in fantasy the last 2 years, even though, you know, he was coming off about 4 or 5 straight years where he was, you know, but pretty much a top 10 guy most years, or if not very close. He's going to be in a new scenario in Chicago, and even though it's not as friendly of a place for power as Arizona is, it's not a downgrade that really is too worrisome. What I look at about Montero, he had a pretty good first half last year. His stats for the first half, he actually he hit .262 with 11 homers, 52 RBIs in 85 games. So if he would have continued that pace, he would have been more expensive for the Cubs to acquire. But he also would be at least a two-star guy here. But he dropped off and was terrible in the second half, even though he showed a lot of the same underlying numbers shy of the power. So in this group of sort of ragtag misfits, I'll spend the extra dollar on Montero that he can sort of rediscover his old magic in Wrigley and put some decent numbers up for another year or so. But I'm not supremely confident about it.
It's kind of interesting that we seemingly collectively agreed that Jason Castro is just pretty much dead.
If they didn't make the move for Hank Conger, I would be absolutely behind Castro as my guy for tier one. But I don't think he's going to play enough. I'd like to see them give him a shot because I don't think 2013 was a fluke. I think he does have the talent to, if not repeat it, but come close to repeating it. And I don't think he's going to get that opportunity again in Houston. That's how bad he was last year.
Yeah, he was very bad. And yeah, it probably cost him a job.
Yeah, he was Tyler Flowers 2013 bad.
Oh, don't bring that up. It was such a bad year.
probably.
Yeah, I actually like Castro and only at a low enough bid, but I would generally agree that if you're in a mix, he's somebody I would kind of just look away from or maybe on a reserve list or like way at the back end.
Yeah, I think if you're in a two catcher AL only league, the really really interesting play is to just completely short Hank Conger and take Castro and Max Stassi as your two catchers. But
wow.
But that's not a strategy for the faint of heart.
Yeah, the Castro Conger play in an AL only at the right price wouldn't be bad either. That's a hoary old strategy. The two catchers from the same team, they're both cheap. You kind of hope one of them works out.
Yeah, that's very true. You certainly have people that employ that strategy, and but the problem with that strategy
is it works better with a team like the Jays, where you have DH slot. Chris Carter's going to DH, so it just doesn't really do you a lot of good getting the extra at bats there.
Yeah, it also works better in an organization that doesn't have a third catcher that could reasonably start. So I think there's a they have Conger and Castro, but they're not going to be a very good team. And I could absolutely envision a scenario where Stassi's the everyday guy in the second half, and they're both just kind of shit out of luck. But I don't know. It's not like they had to pay much for Conger anyway.
You have Corcoran kicking around too, so you're right. It's not a. I think I'm like going to like move my bid down on Castro as we speak.
Well, I mean, Toronto's a perfect example, right? Because Toronto has Martin and Navarro, but I mean, obviously Martin's better than anyone in the Houston scenario, and probably so is Navarro. But who's the third catcher on their depth chart? And I have no idea who the third.
It's totally, I think.
Yeah, I mean,
it probably is still totally, but
he's so bad.
He is.
Yeah, well, Tully's not a guy even in AL only at a buck that you want. He's useful to the Jays. He's not useful to us.
No,
he's more valuable as a pitcher in AL only leagues.
Yeah. I do remember that.
All right. Well, we've completed our game. We've gone through the tiers, so that just about does it for us in our first episode back as we as we go weekly again. You can now not wonder when the next episode of Flags Fly Forever is coming. You know it's coming next week. So there's that.
We promise this time it'll be different, baby.
Don't say it like that, Matt.
Glad to be back, to be honest with you. I kind of missed it.
It is. It's really good to be back. The holidays are behind us. It's go time. It's draft season.
Yeah,
as soon as the calendar turns to January, it's draft season.
Nothing gets my blood going more than talking about Tyler Flowers.
Well, yeah.
Until we get to the relievers, and hopefully Brett don't make us do relievers, it gets better after the catchers. Catchers are a weird place to start. Most of the other positions are more fun.
You know, it wasn't that bad. But yeah, the other positions get a lot of fun.
Very true. Yeah. And yes, we're going to do relievers. So let's take a quick break and come back and see you guys out. That is it. Thank you for listening to another episode of Flags Fly Forever. We have been a Baseball Prospectus fantasy podcast. I have been Brett Sayer, and you have also been listening to Mike Gianella and Mauricio Rubio. Check out our positional breakdown at baseballprospectus.com. Go subscribe today. A regular subscription will get you access to all of the wonderful content that our entire staff is putting out over the next 3 months to get you fully prepared for your fantasy drafts. And an extra $15 a month will get you a number of goodies included in our super premium package. But most importantly, we'll get you access to the Bat Signal, which is our fantasy answering service. We have thousands of satisfied customers at this point since we brought on board, and we will answer any question you have generally within about 12 hours. So use it, enjoy it. It's fun for everybody involved, including us, we hope. We will be back next week to talk about first baseman, and we will, as a side, we will be starting to have guests a little bit more over the course of the next couple of months, just to spice things up a little bit. We have some people who we think would be interesting to hear from, who will bring along and give some insight and share some laughs, and a good time will be had by all. Again, if you want to reach us for topic suggestions or even guest suggestions, if you want to throw that out there, flagsflyforever at baseballprospectus.com. We will see you next week. Enjoy the cold. See you later.
No, it's snowing here. I'm not happy.
It's actually 50 degrees here, but it's going to snow, like, tomorrow.
It's going to be, like, 20 degrees for a high here one day next week. So, yeah, it's going to... We have, like, kind of one of those...